Tonight's talk is Becoming Your Own Best Friend. And I know when I first spoke to Judy and asked her to do the talk, she said, what would you like me to talk about? And I thought, well, that's a non-starter for me, because we've only just met in the last few months and worked together. I know of you for a number of years, but I've never worked with you. And the friendliness, the warmth, the ease, the lightness that you bring to the table when you work with people makes any task a major joy. So I figured, if you were that nice with me, how nice must you be with yourself? And so I thought, this is a non-starter for me. Let's get all the secrets out of Judy today. And so Judy is joining us from Calgary in, I was going to say Australia, but no, it's Canada. And she has a history as working as a coach, a communications coordinator, and a yoga and fitness teacher. And I think you can tell that just from her face. It's that light and easy and full of life. We've asked Judy to cover three different things. First, how to stop being your own worst enemy and start being your own ally. Secondly, accept yourself and stay honest with yourself. And then thirdly, be happy alone and build a healthy relationship with yourself. So Judy's going to share her insights, and then after those insights, she's going to do a very short 3-minute guided meditation that will help us become friends with ourselves and experience that. After that, she'll be taking your questions. So please send us your questions through the question and answer link, and I will put your questions to Judy after. Judy, thank you for joining us, and I leave it to you now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Arti. That was such a sweet introduction. I was just happy if you kept going. But a warm welcome from across the pond. I am indeed coming from Canada, Western Canada, in Calgary. And I was so touched by the topic, you know, and I just kept thinking about it, and I found it really inspiring. And I don't know how well ahead you listening were aware of the topic and found yourself reflecting on it and already might have some insights. But it's such a remarkable and such a precious topic for quality of life. So I really was touched and really honored to be able to share on it. It has been quite a journey. I came from quite an in-depth dance background. So some of you might also have been deeply involved in some arts training. And for me, it was ballet. And ballet, especially, you go in very young. So you're kind of going through those identity crisis years and the peer pressure years. And you're going into an art form that's very linked to, at least on the physical level, self-image, and can be highly competitive. So this is a wonderful concoction, a wonderful mix for not being a best friend with yourself. So it's amazing, you know, this friendship concept when it's with the self, because it's so much to do with what's going on in your head. And when I look at the thoughts I had in my head whilst I was in that dance training, they weren't very friendly at all. I would not want a loudspeaker attached to my head announcing the thoughts in my head. They would have been horrifying. As we say, you would not talk to anyone else that way, but they were very, quite frankly, harsh. And I remember there was one day when it was summer school, and we had always during summer school guest instructors come in. And we had a guest instructor come to give master classes from the National Ballet School in Canada. And he had to bring one of his top ballet dancers with him because they needed to rehearse a new piece and they couldn't lose time while he was traveling. So she decided to travel with him and rehearse the piece in between our master classes. So we would just sit in the back of the studio and they didn't mind if we watched. And ironically, the name of the dancer was Judy. So I felt a real connection with her. And I remember I'd be watching. She was such a stunning and strong dancer. And even almost immediately before I talked to her, I could feel there was something different about her than I'd seen in any other dancers. I was really trying to put my finger on it. What is it? What is so different? I mean, she was amazing dancing. She didn't have that typical on the verge of starvation look that many dancers can have. She looked really strong and healthy physically, and that might have been part of it. She had a beautiful lightness and easiness and welcome feeling about her. And it touched me. I mean, I knew she was a top, you know, professional dancer, and we're just these little students here. I'll never forget when they stopped rehearsal the first time and she walked over to us watching. She started to talk to us as if we were her equals. And I'd never, I mean, dancers, it's not that anyone intentionally wanted to do this, but we're just so insecure that we tend to be very competitive and not so transparent with each other, especially at that, you know, adolescent age. But she was so open and transparent and welcoming and wonderful and supportive and respectful. And I remember thinking, wow, she's just amazing. She's so, it kept coming, she's so healthy. And I didn't mean just physically. I felt she's just a healthy person. And I was trying to put my finger on what is it that is giving this feeling, and the best I could come up with, there was beautiful self-confidence and self-respect that she had. Because the way dance works and what we were watching, what she was allowing us to watch, dancers are rarely complimented by their instructor. The entire class is correction. You are corrected the entire class. And you want to be corrected because that means they're paying attention to you, that you're worthy. But you got to have a pretty thick skin, you know, constant correction. And I remember watching her and, you know, she'd take the correction in such a, it never seemed to diminish her sense of self-worth. You know, it was just such a healthy dynamic to watch. Internally, you could just feel it, how she worked as a dancer and as a human being. And to taste that, it stayed in my head so much. What a healthy soul, the self-confidence, self-respect, and how it really brought quality to her interactions, the way she danced, the way she was with her juniors and seniors. It was just amazing to watch. And then I fast forward a few years and a friend of mine is a photographer and she's been hired to do a series of photos for a business coalition in the city that is anti-drug and supporting healthy lifestyle, if you will, anti-drug campaign. And what they wanted was for her, they assigned, gave a series of odd enough qualities. Each poster would represent a different quality. And they specifically said to her, we do not want you to use models. We want you to use just everyday people. So she hunted down all her friends, and I was one of them. And she arbitrarily decided which poster we would be in. And you can probably guess somehow I landed up in the poster for self-confidence. And I have that poster on my wall. And it just seems so important to that relationship, that friendship with the self, healing the relationship with the self. And then just 2 or 3 years later, I landed up crossing the doorstep of a Brahma Kumari center. And I'll never forget that first lesson which is about the soul, our eternal identity. And I remember I was listening, and to this day, I can't tell you what the instructor said. I have no idea what they said. All I know is what was going on in my head. And from the moment that they said, you are a soul, there was this weird translation that happened in my head, and it exploded and said, this is it. This is the place. This is the place where you get that healthy relationship with yourself. This is it. This is where you get self-respect. This is the only way. It was like crazy. And there was tons of resistance going on from ego, you know, who love to beat up. But it's like, no, this is it. This is where you get a healthy relationship with yourself, where you learn how to value yourself for all the right reasons. And that's why I've stuck to it to this day. You know, if I always say, you know, if Raj Yoga, the Brahma Kumaris, if all of this ever stopped aligning with that objective, I would leave. And it never has. So I'm still here. I just feel it's the most important thing on the planet is that healthy relationship with the self. Everything else depends on it. How to be that friend to the self. And then through the process of the spiritual journey, I continue to discover all these different facets of being a friend. And it's so easy with any friendship to kind of get out of balance in that friendship. So there's so many facets I've discovered. The seed is always self-respect, but there's so many, as we say, roots or values that support that seed. And so as you're listening, I'm going to ask you to do a little inner homework at this point. And so, you know, this idea of being in that space of self-respect, and, you know, sometimes it's a little challenging. I'm going to ask you to think about, you know, a friend you have, and probably you have a lot of respect for that soul. Think about all the different qualities that are involved in that friendship. In other words, what qualities make up the ideal friendship? What does it mean to be a friend at the quality level? So just take a moment to reflect what qualities come to your mind in terms of friendship. So hopefully at least one or two, or maybe a flood have come into your head. And I always think these questions we ask ourselves, to me, this is meditation. It's just being a good investigative reporter of the self, asking questions that are meaningful to the self. So hopefully some qualities did come into your mind. And respect, of course, is probably very close to the foundation. But as I went along, it was quite fascinating because I know we hear this idea of you're a soul so much, and we repeat it, you're a point of light. But I think it's far more interesting when we unpack the significance of saying you are a soul. What exactly will that mean? With respect to the self, and a huge part of it is the qualities, the feelings towards the self, it will unlock. I remember a senior teacher in this organization once giving a beautiful class about this idea of relationship with the self. And I mean, I don't mean to sound disturbing in any way, but the suggestion that for many of us, we almost have a self-loathing, actually, we are our own enemy. And you can imagine how that's going to affect your life. I mean, this might be why we get irritable with some people and impatient with situations and thinking it's the people of the situations, but it's actually because I'm so prickly inside with myself. And so how to heal that and start to bring in. I've loved washing this idea of I am a soul through my head, because I find it's the key to unlock some of these really important qualities that make up a friendship, a good relationship. And for me, of course, there is the respect and there is trust, deep trust in the self. And trust, you know, it's not this case of, okay, I'm going to do whatever I want. Often it's like, okay, I just made a big mistake. I could admit I made a big mistake, but I trust myself to be able to learn from that mistake and transform through that mistake. So it's this almost this sense of knowing at my core, there is something so good and valuable. Even though in certain circumstances, I'm not particularly pretty. I am reactive and impatient, but it's not going to deny. There must be a reason that I am reacting that way. It does not in any way negate who I am at my core. So that next quality of a friendship, which is to be understanding, I always find it interesting how forgiving friendship is, can be. I have some, you know, these souls that I know, and there was one who it's actually, I just saw them moments ago. It's actually my boss. I don't think of her that way, but the owner of the fitness studio I'm at. And she's a very strong personality. She's had to be. She was a world athlete, a world champion. So very strong, but very big heart. And something had happened and there was a little misunderstanding. And I remember she was very upset with me, like really upset with me. And I thought, wow, this isn't good. This could destroy them. Yeah. But it was very interesting how strong and resilient a friendship can be. Because, you know, I fast forward just, I think, a month ago, and we were doing some online filming together. And it was live, so there were souls watching. And I was in the background, a sort of demo person. And she turned around and said, oh, Judy's here with me again. And Judy's my sister. And I'm like, excuse me? She's, yeah, no, it's like that, isn't it, Judy? I mean, at this point, we're like sisters, aren't we? And it was such a lovely feeling. It's just, it's so forgiving when it's the real deal. And it's the real deal based on that respect. And to imagine, I've really, this is a huge part I found of cultivating for myself. There again has to be that core. When we say, you know, have a faith through your soul, what are we really saying? That at our core, there is something so good and beautiful. This is our intrinsic state. And yes, as we disconnected with that sense of self, we've made mistakes, we haven't been that pretty, we've been very reactive, impatient, etc. But it doesn't change what there is at the core. And that's the biggest thing I found, is to constantly go back and remember. We don't meditate, we just remember. Remember who I am at the core. I am that at my core. Because the opposite of that beautiful self-respect, that friendship, is of course ego. And for all of us, ego has a big, big case file. It's massive, unlimited. A big case file itemizing in detail every mistake we've ever made. And at any time, ego can pull out that file from August 19th of 1972, pull it out and said, you did this. You are not worthy. Look what you did. And probably the biggest thing I had to develop dynamic, which is the power of experiencing myself to be a soul, is to have a response to ego. You know, when ego comes and says, you did this, I have proof that you are not good. You are not worthy. You can't be trusted. I have proof. So what kind of rebuttal can one have for that? It's like a legal case here. It was just often odd enough, it was to shock ego. To shock ego and really, you know, not, I, before it was, you know, ego would have so much power and I just sort of cringe and say, you're absolutely right. And start to feel bad, start to betray myself, if you will. But eventually I said, actually, no, I understand now why I did what I did at that time. In other words, love. Love melts ego. Just as water melted the Wicked Witch of the West in The Wizard of Oz, love melts ego. And when we say love, it's got to be pretty powerful. And I don't know of anything more powerful than understanding. Once I understand why that happened, what happened, the dynamic, it's as if it loses all its power as a weapon against me. So learning that art of responding to the past with understanding or love has been huge in healing the relationship with myself. It always requires that I be in that position, that alignment of who I am. I am a soul. I am, if you will, intrinsically good. And we all have a deep love for goodness. We do. So that's really saying a lot about how our heart is built. So this intrinsic, you know, experience of the self is so critical. It's so much more than just saying, I'm a point of light in the center of the forehead. That's simply the entryway. But I want to unpack the significance of being a soul. And a huge part of it is that self-respect, reconnecting with my innate goodness in such a powerful way. It can respond with understanding to this, these crazy files that ego keeps pulling out. And if I don't do that, I will start to look at others in the same way. I'll start to hold the past against others as well, because that's how I do it with myself. So I have to start to really understand what's going on, understand, okay, what was triggered such that maybe it was insecurity, maybe it was fear. Whatever the case, there's always a reason that we go against our true nature. It's a very good reason. So that love, that understanding was massive in healing the relationship with myself. There's so many other qualities that I found developed through that little window, that little point of soul consciousness. There is the trust, there is the understanding, there is the patience, there is listening. You've probably got some of those on your list, you know, and how to cultivate those. It's amazing how just by going deeply into the significance of being a soul, those qualities start to come back online. And I think that this topic of being a friend and starting to create a fortress around the self of those qualities is super, super critical at this time. Because we are alone with ourselves a lot at this time. Maybe not where you are, but where we are here, Alberta, where I am living in Canada, Calgary, actually, the city I am, is a hot spot right now when it comes to the pandemic. We have apparently the highest cases per capita in all of North America for this country as well as the USA. So it's a hot spot. So we've gone into a bit of a lockdown again in some ways. So again, we are alone with our own company. And so it's super important to be a friend to the self. And I think for me, an added layer to that is being in the fitness industry and having the fortune of being with a club, a little boutique club that has a very holistic understanding of wellness. So it's not just the physical. There are, of course, at least four dimensions of wellness. There is the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual. And they really embrace all of them, support all of them. And I think this is huge in being a friend to the self, is being able to benefit the self, support the self with so much patience and understanding and taking care of those four aspects. Ego kind of blocks it. And the number one way it likes to block is laziness. This wonderful head game where, oh, I'm too tired. Oh, I don't have the right facilities. Oh, it's just too much work. Oh, you know, it loves to come up with these things that don't allow us to take care of ourselves, because one of the qualities I have on my list is caring. Friends are caring. That same person I referred to, my boss, just before I came here, I shared, so what's up for you the rest of the day? And she shared, oh, I'm going to go get some flowers. I said, oh. She says, yeah, one of our members, and I mean, she developed such a friendship with the membership. It's really a family. She says, one of our members, one of the sisters, she is expecting twins. And they just noticed that she's been ordered to bed rest. They notice there's a little problem. So she's been ordered to bed rest. So she says, I'm going to go get some flowers and deliver them. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, that's just so sweet. Like, usually club owners don't go that far out of their way. But the caring, you know, of friendship, to be that caring to the self, I think really deeply moves us. And so how to be caring in these four different dimensions at this time, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, is super, super important. We're kind of left to our own resources at this time in terms of caring for the self. And it's such an expression. I found that I've actually keep improving my friendship with myself at this time. I'm really enjoying it through these different gestures of caring in those different parameters. And when I think of those four aspects, I think of them like rings of a tree. I don't think of them in a linear way or in boxes, but I think of them as rings of a tree, concentric circles, with spiritual in the center. And then comes that emotional and then mental and then physical. And they really do interact and are affected by each other, starting with that spiritual. If I can take care of myself at that level, it gives me the inner resources, the resilience, the strength, the creativity to be able to take care of myself at the other levels. So it's been really super important to have structure at this time and to include spiritual care in that structure. So no matter what is going on, and quite frankly, with all of this Zooming and global interaction and the fact that I am at the tail end of the time zones, whenever a Zoom meeting is called, so often it's going to be, I don't know, 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning for me. But my spiritual schedule always starts with morning meditation in class. So how am I going to make the adjustments needed if the meetings are falling right when? So I'm just like, you know what? I still need to have that structure. So if it means I wake up a little earlier, I'm still going to wake up, shower, sit, have that quiet time. It's so critical for me. And I know the excuses will come. Oh, it's really early. Oh my gosh, you're going to die. You're going to die the rest of it. It's like, no, we'll figure it out. We'll get rest when we need it. It's okay. I reassure the self with love. It's going to be okay. But trust me, you'll feel so much better if you make sure this happens. So I have certain spiritual practices during the day have remained sacred. And structure is so important right now. You know, our days are kind of free floating. So important to keep that structure for one's own sanity, to feel grounded. And so still making sure that I'm getting a lot of spiritual sustenance, a lot of quiet time. You know, and I don't think it needs to be long. I'm not saying sit for 20 hours. That's crazy. I actually am now a big fan of, can I get 5 minutes of really quality time with myself? I love it. I love it. It's like going into this beautiful space inside where I just feel like I'm really giving attention, really listening, checking in, what's going on. And if I say, I feel off, it's like, it's okay. I'm glad that you told yourself about that rather than just kind of keep moving along and it just snowballs. So it's a chance to check in and really feel the pulse of the self, really listen to the heart. I love it. So quality moments don't have to be quantity, but quality moments and structuring those into my day. So the spiritual is really taken care of. And that led to the next layer, the emotional, which for me shows up a lot in my being sensitive to feelings of others. I've really been paying a lot of attention to that because I know everybody's going through a difficult time. So one of the things that happened recently is the government of Canada had a meeting with all of those, they call them leaders in faith practices. So being involved with the Calgary Center, I received an invitation. And it's all faiths, all different faiths. We're invited to this Zoom webinar with the national medical officer for the country, Dr. Teresa Tam. So she's the medical officer for the whole country and who doesn't look like she sleeps anymore, but wow, is she ever grounded. And it was such a beautiful meeting. And what she was doing was really calling on us to provide sense and leadership to, if you will, what they call our congregation. And it really touched my heart. It was such an emotional meeting to call and such an emotional conversation. And it stayed inside of me. So lately we had an incident here in Calgary where places of worship can still function and be open, with obviously a very small percentage attending. It's okay, they can do that. But I've also heard, you know, the frontline workers, the doctors and in the province and the city speak. And their request that was specifically to faith leaders as well is, if at all possible, please do your services online. If at all possible. We're dying here. I mean, the ICU, the whole situation is exploding here right now. It just was like, even though technically souls can come to the center in small groups, I just suggested to the family here, if at all possible, please join online, if only in solidarity of this call for help from the medical community. It was just, you know, it's just, we have to take care of our heart emotionally, and that requires a lot of empathy for what's going on with souls around us. It just really keeps our heart healthy emotionally. So that's the emotional, but it depends on that first layer. Do I listen to my own heart? If I listen to my own heart, which is spirituality, that capacity to be sensitive to the hearts of others, which is our emotional wellness, improves. And then we get to the next level, that mental. When our heart is clean and when we're very supportive, we feel really light. And so that lightness is going to express itself in all sorts of creative ways. So this is a huge part. Mental is fascinating. Mental, we were talking about just before, is keep that newness happening, that adventuresome sort of nature. I am one of the aspects of my life, my weekly regime, is I have one parent who is in, I love this phrase, memory care. I'm not a fan of saying dementia. So they're in memory care. So I visit them twice a week, you know, as much as possible. I love these visits, you know, because it's all about mental, right? I mean, this is sort of what they say, this mental deterioration going on. I love it. I love it. It teaches me so much because you get to learn about what actually stimulates that mental activity. You know, their language centers are breaking down. They often are completely incoherent. But they're still very vibrant beings in there. And so every time I walk in, for whatever reason, all the residents think I'm staff. It's the weirdest thing. So I walk in and they all greet me. They're all happy to see me. And I'm just immediately chatting away and questioning them and sort of pushing, not pushing, but really challenging them to, you know, to, they love that stimulation because a lot of their day might turn into sitting around, not doing much. And I thought, I wonder if that's what many people's days have turned into, sitting around, being quite passive. So constantly having to, you know, whether it's a DIY project or we were talking about, you know, walking different pathways, constantly getting stimulation going on, that mental stimulation, huge right now, because it supports your capacity for problem solving. Again, it depends on the seed. How strong is that seed, that sense of self, listening to my heart? Then I'll have more trust, more openness to try new things. And the last one, of course, is the physical, which, you know, luckily I had sort of a habit in place being involved in the fitness industry. But it's always been an expression of spirituality for me. When you walk onto the weight floor into a fitness studio, it's all about spirituality. I know it looks physical, but it's all about will. It's about connecting. You know, when I'm sitting there and souls are kind of slowly dying, and at that point, it's mind over matter. It's willpower. The spirit, the soul has to will their way through that last rep. And when they do, that sense of achievement, that faith in the self, it's remarkable. I recently saw a beautiful video. It's a fitness instructor in the States, the United States. And he's very, like, I think people would be intimidated. Me, a new fitness goer would be very intimidated. He's quite a strong looking. And he's very hip hop and is quite interesting. Anyways, his thing, it's fascinating, even though he himself is super fit, crazy fit, his thing is to really inspire, encourage the obese, underconditioned population. He attracts them to his class. It's the weirdest thing. And watching that dynamic, it's completely spiritual. He's connecting. He even will look them in the eye while they're doing an exercise, and he is just willing the soul to believe in themselves and push through, not in an unsafe or punitive way, but believe in the self, push through, benefit. It's a beautiful thing to watch. It's happening through the physical, but it's married to all the other aspects of the self. So in essence, planting the seed of that relationship, that self-respect, which I think is a spiritual endeavor, reconnecting to my innate goodness, real faith in the self and the precious treasures we each have inside. And then building on that, learning the dynamic of how to respond to the enemy, if you will, the resistance to change, you know, that ego, those false beliefs, mastering the art of responding to that inner dynamic so that then I'm free to start to create structures in my day that keep demonstrating to the self, I am your friend. I am going to take care of you. So this is been my little experiment over the last few days. So the topic was just so in line with what I have been working on a lot myself. So I thought we could use this time in our reflection to really just set up a space inside, you know, that space we talked about, where I can come and not have to really do much of anything, but just listen to my heart. Just creating that space inside. So hopefully you are seated comfortably. That would be a friend to yourself. If not, make sure you are. And go ahead, take a moment or two to really slow things down. Taking a breath. And then that slow release of air that can help the body to release any hidden tension. And maybe another breath in. And again, that slow release of air that gives the feeling to the self of slowing things down. Focusing on the breath also helps me to focus my attention, to really be here now. And that makes it easier to move my attention upwards, that space behind the forehead, that unlimited, very powerful space, my inner world, a space of thoughts, feelings, memories, perspectives, attitudes. It's such a powerful place. And when I first enter my inner world, it might seem very cluttered, noisy, incoherent. In fact, it might feel like I brought a lot of the outer world into my inner world. Lots of thoughts about what's going on outside. That's okay. But today, I'm going to keep walking more and more inwards with my attention. I, the thinker, moving more and more inwards until I start to feel all those usual thoughts are fading a bit into the background. And I arrive at a space inside, like my own inner meditation room, my own inner sanctuary. It's a beautiful space. It's simple, uncluttered, light. I leave the shoes of worldly thoughts outside the door and come inside. It's a place where I feel I can breathe. My mind can catch its breath. It's a space where I don't have to prove anything or explain anything or defend anything or show anything. I just get to be here with myself, become quiet, let the peace of this space wrap around me like a blanket, and listen. I just listen. I become quiet and listen to my heart, because in my heart there is a memory of who I really am, of my own innate goodness and how I can care for it. Let me return to this space often. Keep decorating the walls of the space with patience, with acceptance, with forgiveness. Create and fortify this space and use it to heal my relationship with myself. Om Shanti.
Thank you, Judy. I think it'll take a moment for people just to get their questions in, but the two that have a couple that have come in. It was an excellent talk, so thank you. What was the name of the video in physical structure?
The video?
I think maybe they misheard. I wasn't sure, so I thought I'd say it anyway, but yeah.
Okay. I might need more help.
All right.
It might be.
The person who's asked that question, if you'd like to point a little further for us to find it for you, that would be lovely. So the next question. What technique do you use in meditation to connect with your innate goodness? As you were saying, and I also agree, just saying to yourself you are a peaceful soul doesn't really get you there.
Yeah. One thing I found really interesting, and I am a huge fan of timing. I do have a sister who's also in the studies that some of you might have met, Tanya. I came into the study first, technically 6 years before her. In my heart, I knew this would be something that would interest her, but I felt very strongly I would never push. And I got a lot of pressure from others to push her along. But I said, I won't ever push. I feel this is something that will, you know, the fact that you're sitting here listening to this, I feel that these are concepts that will appeal to you, but at the right time. Because an important aspect of being able to connect to the self in a meaningful way inside, to connect to that seed, is I have to be kind of ready. And one of the words we sometimes use is disinterest. And I remember that very strongly, that I was tired of not respecting myself. I was tired of not liking myself. And you say, well, of course, everybody's, oh, you wouldn't believe how long we can hang on to something crazy. I really was up against the wall. It had been going on for many, many years. And there was a pivotal, there was a deciding moment. So I'm a big fan of timing, that one really has to be ready. And we'll keep watering, we'll keep preparing the soil, listening to these kinds of discussions, exposing yourself to spiritual ideas. It's not that it's wasted. What if I'm not ready? It's all very useful so that when you are ready, and I joke about Tanya, she was in the womb for 6 years. It's like, is she ever going to come up? But when she did, whoa, full blown. It was crazy. So I respect timing so deeply. So continue to expose yourself. If you feel, yeah, I feel this is right. I feel that self-respect is the main thing. I may not be able to experience being a soul or anything yet. It's okay. Keep your eye on the vision. I feel this is really important. And keep preparing the soil, keep exposing yourself, because the main thing that's happening is it's like we're brainwashing, and our brain needs to be washed. It's not a bad use of the word. Literally, there's crazy ideas in our head and it needs to be washed. So I'm a big fan of just keep exposing yourself to it. I know you want a technique. The technique is exposure. The technique is timing, these crazy entities we can't necessarily control. But keep exposing. Clearly, this interests you. Wonderful. Keep exposing. Keep sitting with it honestly. Never try to fake an experience of being a soul. You deserve better than that. Kind of respect your own timing. You think this is important. You're here. Congratulations. And respect your own timing. Keep exposing yourselves to the ideas and it will happen. You know, we were talking about seeds just before. I've been compared to an avocado plant so many times. Now, avocado plant appears to be doing nothing for a very long period of time. Nothing's going on. But eventually it just kind of, and it produces very big fruit. So I respect timing a lot. Just keep exposing yourself to the ideas. Stay connected to your vision. Keep revising your vision. Yes, I do feel the relationship with the self is super important. And become comfortable with quiet time with the self so that you're giving an opportunity for that seed to really take. So those are some thoughts.
Thank you. Next question. You've given brilliant advice how to use love to melt ego. I'm slowly getting over guilt as I'm reflecting on the reasons in the past, but I need to get rid of another negative layer, which is regrets, wishing I could have known otherwise. What could you give me to give the strength to close the door to regrets, please?
I know it's such a big one. And sometimes, one of the things that we sometimes do is, what if someone came to you, a friend came to you, someone who you care about, and they were feeling regrets or guilt about something they had done? How would you speak to them? What would you say to them? You know, it's amazing how we say, well, but no, I have objectivity. I'm not. And that's a piece of what we need, is a little bit of objectivity about the self. You know, and I think that these things go hand in hand, that the more that attitude towards the self becomes the same as we might have for an outside person, that kind of, it's a forgiveness, really. And I think that, you know, we have to really appreciate stories, the power of stories. There was once I saw a movie, some of you might have heard of it, called The Red Violin. Fascinating film, really. And the main character in this film is the paint on the violin. You don't realize that until kind of into the movie, that that's the narrator, is actually the paint on the violin. I won't tell you what the paint is made of. It will disturb you, but it's the paint on the violin. And you're watching this movie, it's just so strange. It's a bunch of seemingly disconnected scenes that you're shown, always with this red violin, involving this red violin. And some of them are crazy violent scenes. Some are very romantic. It's just bizarre, you know? And then you start to see towards the end of the movie, and what's exposed at the end of the movie ties, and you go, oh my gosh, this movie's brilliant. I needed to see that scene and that scene for this scene to make sense. And, you know, part of what happens to us is we're not really aware of our full story. And the fact that we acted a certain, I always say, oh, if I could only go back, I would have done it differently. No, you wouldn't. You would do the exact same thing. Because we always do the best we can given the cards we're dealt. And those cards can be external situation, external pressures, but also internal pressures. We always do the best we can in the context of that moment in the story. This is, of course, compassion. And once I start to, even if I don't know the details, just I know that I did what I could in that moment, given the pressures that were being exerted on me externally and internally, I did the best I could. Once I start to have this kind of attitude, it will change my vision for other people as too. I'll stop being so judgmental of others. You know, I just want to give you a big hug because again, it's just, we do the best we can at any given moment, given the pressures being exerted on us. And I think when we're talking to a friend and they're saying, oh my gosh, why did I do that? Oh, it was just such a bad. And it's like, we always say, you know, look, you did the best you could in that moment. I mean, there was this going on and that going on. And you know, it's like, you know, we said, no, if I could go back, if you went back, you would do the exact same thing. Because we're back in that scenario where we have the same pressures. So to really respect the aspects of your story, which something, again, that spirituality helps us to be more clear on, is the aspects of our story. We have phenomenal pressures being exerted on us at any given time, especially from within. Imagine how one would act if they constantly felt they were being bombarded with negative attitudes. If I don't have a good feeling towards myself, I can't expect myself to act in my best way. I'll finish by saying that when I was young, in grade one, I went to a Hebrew school. And in the morning, we had our English classes. And in the afternoon, we had our Hebrew teacher, our Hebrew Judaism classes. And our morning teacher, Mrs. Tillotson, this is a sign. I remember her name, but I don't remember the Hebrew teacher's name. Mrs. Tillotson was a jewel of a teacher. A jewel. She was actually brought out of retirement. She was that good. And her secret weapon, even though we were only 6 years old, her secret weapon, I could feel it at 6 years. She looked at each of us with so much respect, equally. She didn't have favorites, as if we were the most precious commodities on the planet. As a result, she never had to raise her voice. She never had to discipline. We could anticipate from a signal what she was going to do and how we could cooperate. What she had going on in that room was a miracle with a bunch of six-year-olds, some who were ADD and whatever. So there was always parent day at school where the parents would come, sit in the back of the room, and they could witness the class. And so they came in the morning. In the morning, we're with Mrs. Tillotson. It was this beautiful vision of us, on us, of just so much respect and regard and love. And our parents are watching this, and every single student's the same. You know, we're all just so happy to be here and so respectful of each other. And our parents are watching, saying, oh my gosh, they're all such little angels. They are just little angels. And then we go to afternoon class, and our Hebrew teachers were not trained teachers. They were very trained in the subject matter, but they had no training as Hebrew, as teachers. So this was their worst fear, is to have a room of six-year-olds unleashed on them. They have no idea how to interact with them or discipline them or anything. So we were basically frightening to them. So afternoon was chaotic. Afternoon was just crazy. They looked, the vision of the Hebrew teacher had in us was like, you are the enemy. You terrify me. So our parents would be watching in the back of the room, and they're like, oh my gosh, our children are devils. They're little devils. And it's the same kid. But the vision was different. That was the secret, the vision. And so to have a vision on the self, you know, that's just so respectful, even when I make mistakes, understanding, look, I know you've got a lot of pressures on you, mostly from within. And I am trying to work on changing that by changing my attitude towards myself. once I change the attitude towards the self, I'll water that capacity to act to my highest potential. I know there's no time to talk about what honest means, but in essence, it means to honor the best in the self. That's all I'm trying to do, is move into a space where I see myself clearly, but I never stop believing in myself. It is such a work, such a process. You're really hitting the big ones in these questions, to have that forgiveness, to have that understanding. And it can't, unfortunately, be fully addressed in this time, but they are really important dynamics to sort out in the self.
Wow, thank you. Our friend is back with a bit of clarification. And you said when you talked about the physical side, there was someone who looked at people and brought out the best soul in them. I think he was training people physically, yeah. But I didn't get the name.
Right. Yeah, I'm embarrassed because I don't mention. He's an instructor in Texas, I believe. His name is Phil, and he's all over YouTube. Phil Hip Hop Step. If you search on YouTube, Phil Texas Hip Hop Step, you'll probably get to him. Prepare yourself. He's kind of crazy. But it's lovely to watch how he just inspires souls to break through those limiting beliefs and not give up. That's his big thing, is don't quit. Just, these are people who are moving into obesity that is a health concern. So it's pretty precious what he's doing for them.
Wow, sounds brilliant. Mm-hmm. Now, next question. Do you have any tips for how to become comfortable with failure?
Oh, you know, I think it is, intellectually, we sort of get this, these different things that we can say to ourselves, like, I'm going to learn from this. and it's just, you know, it goes back again. I keep harping back to the same thing, I know. But the more comfortable I am, you know, the more entertaining I can respond to failures, complete public, you know. And being a fitness instructor is really interesting, because you are just constantly out there in front, you know, and there are expectations of you. And, you know, there's days when you're incoherent, or you're just completely not making any kind of sense. And to me, it's just, when you are free of that ego, when you're super comfortable in your own skin, you just become super entertaining about your own failures. It's just, you want to learn. There was one incident where we were teaching a class, and we had in the class a student who was prone to epileptic seizures, and that was on file. And in my class, he actually had a seizure. And I'm used to working in facilities where there's a really structured protocol response to emergencies. And this, there wasn't really a structured one. There was no communication chains or anything. So you're kind of left your own devices to respond. And I remember just feeling, maybe because that structure wasn't there, I just felt, I am completely bombing at this response. I am doing such a bad job at this response. It's pretty important, you know. This isn't something you want to fail at. I thought, I'm not feeling really confident with what I'm doing here with this response. I came away just feeling that did not go well. That was just bad. Now, I could have spent a very long time beating myself. I do remember coming with, you know what? Not that I would ever wish that the soul has a seizure again, but if they do, I can. This is what I learned. This is what I need to do in the future. So I really want to use my energy to focus on coming from that place of self-respect. Look, I could tell completely why things went bad. I could tell what pressures were going on in my head. I could tell what happened, that things fell apart. I learned so much. Now, the irony is, 1 week later, that soul went into seizure again. And it was fascinating, because I had used that time not to feel bad, But what did I learn? What do, if this, not that I want it to happen again, but if it did ever happen again, I do have confidence in my capacities to respond to this. What did you learn? What could you change? How can you deal with those inner pressures? What needs to happen? And when it happened again, literally my first one, oh my God, I'm getting a chance. I'm getting a chance. And I was like, everything I had rehearsed and understood and learned from the past, somehow it went to effect. It was night and day. It was a completely different experience. So yeah, I am a big fan of, you know, to be very, very, I know sometimes they're very heavy, serious things, but always, what is going to be useful here to myself and others? If I sit there and just feel bad and guilty, I am getting nothing out of this. It happened for a reason. Again, back to storylines. This happened in my story for a reason. I want to take full benefit from what happened. You know, we have the saying, use everything in a worthwhile way. And we always think more around nice things. I'll donate here, I'll give my time there. But we never think of using a mistake in a worthwhile way. And yet I think that's one of the top things we have to learn to use in a worthwhile way. And, you know, getting stuck in that negative place is such a bad use of that mistake. Can I turn that mistake into something useful, into a gift, into something valuable, into, you know, there's so much that can come out of that mistake if I'm light enough to use it in a worthwhile way. So again, it's an art to develop, and it depends on the health of the seed, that relationship with the self.
Wow. Everything happens for a reason. I like that. Thank you. I have this, the next question. I have this issue of mistakes replaying in my head, yeah? But this usually occurs when sleeping. How do I deal with this?
Oh, our inner world is such a wonderful place. You know, one of the things, if you know this is something that happens regularly, you need to take a lot of care about what's going on at the end of your day. You know, we talked a bit about loading, and it was beautiful what RT shared. I mean, I'm thinking Inner Space is such a good friend of all of you, all of these resources they're providing. And I was going to say, those early morning meditations, those 8:30 meditations, I took advantage of those. But the evening time is super important. We know, I mean, science has told us, and I think we know in our hearts, that dream time is when our unconscious or subconscious kind of does what it needs to do and puts things together the way it wants. And so one thing I value very much is my quiet time at the end of the day, knowing that it will very much affect the beginning of the day, but also it will affect my sleep time. And I think, again, to stay light in general, yes, we don't feel we have much control of what's going on in sleep time. We can be very concerned about what's coming up. And we just say, it's okay, stay light about it. Don't be over concerned. But also to set yourself up for newness during your sleep time depends a bit on what you do at the end of your day. So really important to have some reflection time. And if this looping mistakes in your head is something that you've noticed is happening, that's going to help you to direct, you know, set a program for yourself of, how do I want to use that time at the end of the day? What kind of energy or attitude or virtue would neutralize what I'm experiencing when I'm asleep? I want to focus on that neutralizing quality. So it might be that I'm going to make that time at the end of my day a time when I focus a lot on forgiveness or understanding. And that book that Artie talked about, it was so funny when she shared, because that was actually a book I had. It was a much earlier edition because I'm quite ancient, but I used it when I first came into the study, exactly the way she talked about. They're beautiful short excerpts. I would just read one and it would really launch my inner reflections. So, you know, finding things that are about forgiveness and experiencing those in your time with yourself at the end of your day creates a nice neutralizing energy, a setup to experiment with. If you know that that's something that tends to happen during sleep, you're just giving some different information to your subconscious. So that's something to experiment with.
Thank you. Next question. Do you think that whatever qualities we find really attractive in others is because we have them somewhere inside of ourselves? If that's so, how do we connect with those qualities and allow them to be a personal expression rather than copying someone else?
Beautiful question. One of the exercises I did, it came out of a reflection I had. I call it the sacred mandalas. I don't know where it came from. I don't know, maybe there was some sort of Celtic birth somewhere. Because I literally envisioned a sacred ground and there were four stones. And when I'm inside that sacred ground, it's a very powerful experience. It's very strange. I don't know where this came from. It was quite odd, but it became kind of a foundation for reflection. And I actually have my my mat that I have my meals, you know, my placemat is lamination of this exercise. It's actually an exercise that you do on a paper with a mandala and reflecting and questions. And one of the questions is exactly on this. The four questions are, who am I? So what quality really defines who I am? You know, we don't just say I'm a soul, but that's a qualitative experience of self. Who am I? What single quality defines who I am at my core? What feeds me is the next question. And that is going to really create that link with God. What do I want to get from this? Or what feeds me? The next one is about your question, what moves me? And this is about integrating my sense of self, that quality, into my actions. So we'll see someone doing something. Like for me, when I see someone performing an act of integrity, even if it means that they might in some way be attacked or, you know, it might be personally, but their integrity is, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird was one of my favorite books. I am moved. I'm deeply moved. Or when I see someone start to believe in themselves and act on that, have that integrity, it just almost moves me to tears. You know, again, what really, when we see someone else, it moves me to tears because exactly what you said, it's a core quality of yourself. So you won't actually have to worry about how do I make it my own. It's activated because it's in you. I need to just create the right circumstances for it to emerge. So reflect, it could be a beautiful meditation for you to really feel, just not think it, but what's the feeling? What's that quality feel? It's like your mind is savoring that quality, tasting it. So that's the third quality, what moves me? That quality that when I see it in someone else, it really moves me. And I want it to color every action. I want it to move me through the day. And the fourth quality is what honors me. And this has to do with how I treat others. I maintain the honor of the self when I treat others in an honorable way. What quality allows me to honor others? So I have this placemat. So every time I'm eating a meal, I'm looking at these four things. And I love it. Every single time it's like I'm eating the food, but I'm also tasting these qualities inside because I want them to go deep into me. I don't have to really, they're there. They're there. They're just waiting to come out. You know, and so very naturally, I'm connecting to being a soul, I'm connecting to God, I'm connecting to integration, but through the lens of these qualities. So I really love this. I think it's important to acknowledge those qualities that really move you when you see them in someone else and really say, yeah, no, I don't have to, they are me, they are there. They're just waiting for the right context to emerge. So I just need to water them with attention. That is, let me feel them, not by remembering the scene I saw them in, but just that pure quality. If it's compassion, what does that feel like? And there may not be words, just feelings, you know, just senses that come into the mind, what that feels like. And the more time I spend, it's emerging. What's in me is emerging. Taste those qualities.
Wow, I love this idea. I think I might just get myself a placemat just like that. Make one
for myself. If I remember, I'll send you the...
Oh, yeah, it'd be lovely. Yeah, thank you. Gosh, then I will definitely get one made for myself. That sounds like a great idea. Particularly as, you know, having your meals mindfully rather than being distracted by your phone or the iPad or another thing, but to be able to reflect and helps your digestive system and your health. So I think that would be brilliant. Thank you for that. Okay, next question. Over time, I've managed to keep an exercise routine going. It's been an interesting journey and one I'm trying to do with more ease. Do you have any tips on how to turn force into empowerment? Because sometimes my determination can be a bit forceful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such an interesting thing. I mean, it depends a bit on what you're doing. One of the examples I give, first off, I'm a big fan of making sure that your physical fitness regime is well balanced. If it's not, then the body starts to send signals that it doesn't want to do it anymore. And then we start to use force to keep it going. So it should have a cardio component, a strengthening component, and super important, a restorative or stretching or relaxing component. So that's really important to check that it's actually balanced, because then it's more sustainable. But there's something that happens. I'm someone who, for however long this morning, the workout I snuck in was boot camp. So it was an interval training workout that another instructor was giving. And, you know, so it was a certain length of time. And I am someone who generally stretches for almost the equal amount of time. And I've noticed that many people love to, you know, push and violent and kill and, you know, but they don't seem to have the same love affair with the restorative and the stretching elements. And I sort of wondered, what's that about? You know, and I love to jump around and challenge like the rest of them, but I find it so important to have that restorative piece. And I thought, what kind of relationship do we have with our body and therefore ourselves that we just, the only signs of progress are if I was killed and I push and I beat. We don't value so much the restorative. This is also very healthy. This is also a fitness regime. So if we can incorporate some of that, it might be more sustainable. Again, I don't know what your fitness regime is, but it's lovely to make sure, because I started to notice that when I had this very overtly restorative piece, the stretching, my boot camp stuff also became quite gentle. It's on. I'm still pushing hard. I'm still doing crazy burpees and everything. And it connects to the alignment class that Tanya gave, that we actually get more out of ourselves when we are light and open and released as when we push and gird. So I tend to feel it's really important to have, because we find it easier to do the violent stuff, to give a lot of focus to the restorative, relaxing, elongating, releasing type of exercises, because they will bleed into the more sort of the more active type of workouts I do. And that makes everything sustainable. I enjoy. Otherwise, we start to run into something called burnout and we try to push. And that's not good physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. So part of making our regime sustainable is that there be this variety I know many people tend to do the same thing. We've got souls who just cycle. And it just, I cringe. They're just cycling. Great cardio workout. Nothing wrong with cycling, but not only cycling. Posturally, they're like this. And it's just so hard on the soul in so many ways. The soul, one of the innate qualities of the soul is balance. It likes to have a well-rounded approach. It doesn't like extremes. I, the soul, do not like extremes, even though we've become extreme. I don't like extremes in my innate sense. So trying to make sure whatever I go at, whether it's nutrition or fitness or creativity, that there is balance or well-rounded, really important, more sustainable.
Wow. Tanya, there's still questions, but we do have to draw a line. I'm so sorry. Could you believe it?
No, I'll just stay with you all day. It's only one for me.
And unfortunately, I have another session, so otherwise I'd be so happy to go on. But thank you so much for being such a good friend to us.